Russells legendariske, eller beryktede, om man vil, analyse av Wagners Nibelungring, der hun selv også synger og spiller eksempler og ledemotiver og illustrerer personlighetene som man møter i denne svære operasyklusen. Ganske godt imponerende gjort, og jeg håper å si, enten man liker eller setter pris for denne formen for humor eller ikke, så er den faktisk ganske korrekt. Det er det som er litt imponerende med den. Alle de morsomme små tingene som hun kommer med, kommentarene, de er riktige. Og så hun setter jo alt sammen litt på spissen selvfølgelig, men har også en ganske god teft på hva som egentlig foregår. Og den er ikke så dum, hverken for folk som kjenner denne, de vil jo kanskje skjønne noen av vitsene enda bedre, men det er også høyst forståelig for folk som ikke er så veldig inne i Wagners univers.
Now that the opera season is with us again, I feel it would be appropriate for me to give a talk on Wagner's Ring der Nibelungen. Now I know that analyses of the ring are frequently given over the radio by some great expert for the edification of other great experts. But these are usually so esoteric as to leave the average person as befogged as before. And in fact, I think tends to discourage him from going altogether. So I would like to tell you about it as from the point of view of one average opera goer to another. Now, the first thing is that every person and event in the Ring cycle has what is grandly termed a leitmotif. Now, you don't need to worry about that. It merely means a signature tune. The scene opens in the River Rhine. In it. If it were in New York, it would be like the Hudson. And swimming around there are the three Rhine maidens, a sort of aquatic Andrew sister. Or sometimes they're called Nixies. Mersey Nixon, Dozy Nixon, Little Nixie Divey. And sing their signature tune, which is as follows. I won't translate it because it doesn't mean anything. The Rhine maidens are looking after a lump of magic gold. And the magic of this gold consists of the fact that anybody who will renounce love and make a ring out of this gold will become master of the universe. This is the gimmick. Now, up from underneath the river, as it might be, let's say, the Holland Tunnel, comes a little dwarf called Alberic. And here he is. Ghastly glitter, glittering a glimmer, be glad yourselves. Mit Händen und Füßen, ich fasse noch, hält der schlechtere Schlupfer, durch den Nas, füllt mir die Nase. Well, you can see he's excessively unattractive. He makes a pass at the Rhine maidens, who think he's perfectly dreadful, and so they're not very nice to him. They tell him, du heiliger, höckliger Gick, schwarzer, schwieriger Spiel von den Zwergen. So he thinks, well, I'm not going to get any love anyhow, I can see that. So I may as well renounce it and take this lump of gold, make the ring and become master of the universe. So he takes back the Holland Tunnel with him. And here he is making the ring. No steel strikes here. Well, that's him. Well, now, up here, as it might be on top of the Empire State Building, you find Wotan, the head god. And he's a crashing bore, too. Well, he and his wife, Mrs. Frika Wotan, have had a castle built for them called Valhalla. By a couple of giants called Fasolt and Fafner. Well, of course, the giants want to be paid for building this castle, and part of the giants' builders' union scale consists of this magic ring that Alberic's made. So Wotan goes all the way down from where he is to Alberic and takes the ring away from him. Well, of course, Alberic is simply furious. So he puts a terrible curse on the ring. That's the wrong curse, isn't it? I'm sorry, here. No notice, he takes the ring up and gives it to Fasolt. And right away, Fafner kills Fasolt to get the ring for himself. So Wotan knows that the curse is working. And this worries him, so he goes down to ground level to consult an old fortune teller friend of his called my friend Erda. She is a green-faced torso that pops out of the ground. At least we think she's a torso, that's all anyone's ever seen of her. And she says to Wotan, she says, Vaike Wotan, Vaike! Which means, be careful, Wotan, be careful. She then bears him 8 daughters. Daughters are the Valkyries, headed by Brunhilda, and they are the noisiest women. Well, that is the end of part one. In part two, you find Wotan wandering about on the earth, and he has a couple of illegitimate children by a mortal, Siegmund and Sieglinda, whilst disguised under the singularly appropriate name of Wolf. These children become separated at birth, and Sieglinda marries a funny sort of a man called Hunding. He plays the Wagner tuba. He plays it very well. He also has an ash tree with a sword stuck in it growing through his living room floor. Well, one day, who should turn up but Siegmund? And he falls madly in love with Sieglinde, regardless of the fact that she's married to Hunding, which is immoral, and she's his own sister, which is illegal. But that's the beauty of grand opera. You can do anything so long as you sing it. And after having given Hunding a Mickey Finn so that they won't wake him up, they certainly do sing it. That off their chest. Siegmund pulls out the sword that's stuck in the tree that grows in the house that Jack, that Hunding built. And they run away together. Well, of course, when Hunding comes to, he's very annoyed and he chases after them, and there's a tremendous battle that everybody gets mixed up in. Dead. Mr. and Mrs. Votan have an argument. And Votan's furious with Brunhilde. He's mad at Brunhilde because he told her she was not to side with Siegmund. And she did. And so as a punishment, he puts her on a rock and he surrounds her with impenetrable fire. And that's the end of part two. Well, part three is devoted to the growing up of Siegfried, a child of Siegmund and Sieglinde. And he's very young, and he's very handsome, and he's very strong, and he's very brave, and he's very stupid. He's a regular little Abner type. There's not too much you need to know about this opera, except that Votan comes down and plays 20 questions with them. And Siegfried gets the ring. Do you remember the ring? Well, he gets the ring by killing Fafner, the giant, who's turned into a dragon in this opera. Don't ask me why. Well, then a little bird tells him, and he finds Brunhilde. He finds Brunhilde on the fire-surrounded rock. Well, now, he's never seen a woman before, so he doesn't know what she is. But he soon finds out. And they go in for some very competitive singing. The type of thing, anything you can sing, I can sing loud. I think probably she wins. Well, then They fall in love, and he gives her the ring. She's his aunt, by the way. But nonetheless, they are in love and everything's very happy, and you'd think that would be the end of it, wouldn't you? But no fear. Götterdämmerung. That's part four. Well, now, in the beginning of part four, you have the three Norns, or Fates, and they are also daughters of my friend Erda, the green-faced torso. And therefore, presumably, they are also Siegfried's aunts. But this bunch of aunts are... This bunch of aunts are just as droopy as the first lot were noisy. You remember the Valkyrie aunts? They go... Well, this lot are just the opposite. If they don't tell this whole story right over again from the beginning. So actually you can miss out parts one, two, and three and come in at the beginning of Götterdämmerung and you'll be just as far ahead. When, meanwhile, Siegfried's tired of love on the rocks with Brunhilde. And Brunhilde's gone completely to pieces. You remember, her signature tune used to be... Well, now, it's changed to this. La 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 la. So love has certainly taken the ginger out of her. Well then, Siegfried goes off on his travels and he meets three people, Gunther and Gutrune Gibich, and their half-brother, Hagen, whose mother was a Gibich. But whose father was Alberic the dwarf. Do you remember Alberic? So, Hagen greets Siegfried like this. Siegfried, now, do you recognize that tune? That's the same music as Alberic's curse. Sure enough, there's dirty work afoot. Because Hagen gives Siegfried a magic potion that makes him forget all about Brunhilde and fall in love with Gutrune Gibich. Who by the way, is the only woman that Siegfried has ever come across who hasn't been his aunt. I'm not making this up, you know. Well, so when Brunhilde finds out about this, of course, naturally, she's frightfully annoyed, and she plots with Hagen to kill Siegfried. And Hagen kills him. Well, of course, as soon as he's dead, she's sorry. I know you men are going to say, so like a woman. And so she is sorry, and she builds a funeral pyre, and she puts Siegfried on it. And she gets on her horse, and she gallops on the funeral pyre too, and she lights it, and they burn up. Well, that sets Valhalla alight, and it burns up. Well, in Wotan and all the gods, burn up. Then the whole works catches fire and it all burns up. It's all burnt. Well, then the River Rhine overflows its banks. Do you remember the Rhine? And the waters come in over the ashes. And who do you think turns up next? The Rhine Maidens. So they take their lump of gold, I mean the ring, which is of course their lump of gold, and they put it back where it came from. And after sitting through this whole operation, what do you hear? You hear... You're exactly where you started 20 hours ago.
Det ikke sikkert at hele Nibelungringen tar 20 timer, men det sjelden så veldig langt unna. Bortsett fra det så har Anna Russell ganske rett I mye av det hun sier, og Rindøtrene gir en rekapitulasjon av handlingen på slutten, men det får man egentlig ganske mange ganger I løpet av den syklusen, I hvert fall hvis man hører på musikk. Og ledemotivene til Wagner som stadig gjenforteller historien. Dette var altså Anna Russells berømte analyse, tatt opp I New York en gang på 1950-tallet.